I'm sorry, I'm an alcoholic. I don't know what I'm going to finish saying. He said I could do one or the other. I'm going to try any of them first. I'd like to thank everybody for showing up tonight. I'd like to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for giving me the opportunity to be here and share my experience, strength, and hope with everybody. I'd also like to thank my higher power. I choose to call him God. This is kind of weird for me. I've been around this program. My sobriety date is, bless you, September 11th, 1988. I was very fortunate when I came into this program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I was in a good class. I was like everybody else that's in here. We pretty much had nowhere to turn, nowhere to go, except for meetings. There was probably a dozen of us that our whole life at that point was just centered on trying to stay sober. The topic of our conversations was after the meeting is, where is the next meeting? And we formed a pretty good bond. We all had each other's phone numbers. If somebody didn't show up to the next planned or scheduled meeting, we would always call one another. We kind of watched each other's back. And it was a good ride. It was kind of interesting for me that, and for I think all of us in here, when we come in, we have debt. We have issues with our significant others. We have no money. We don't have a job. But it's kind of interesting for myself. When I showed up here, it seemed like all of those worries kind of went away. Because I was at the point that if I didn't stop drinking and stopped all the other stuff that went along with my extracurricular activities, I was going to end up in jails, an institution, or I was going to die. I came from a good family. I was a three-sport letterman in high school. Pretty much had straight A's all 4 years of high school. I was probably one of those guys that was voted to most likely to succeed. I was a tough guy, I thought. You know, playing football, basketball, and baseball. I did not think that I would let my alcoholism get in the way of my life, my goals, and things I wanted to do and trying to accomplish as a young adult. But I was mistaken. I underestimated the power of alcoholism. I underestimated the power of addiction, and before you know it, I was in a spiral, whatever you want to call it, of going nowhere. I remember friends of my parents that I was really good friends with. You know how we never really bond with our parents, we always bond with somebody else, you know, grandma, grandpa, or the guy down the street or whatever. And he came up to me and he said, Nunes, he says, you're going nowhere fast. You're going to have to watch out. And you know, that really didn't sink in until, after I was in jail. I never thought, being a straight-A student, three-sport letterman, that I would, for all of us, we always think we're pretty slick, we're pretty cool, that we're pretty fast, you know, smooth talkers or whatever. But it sunk in. I didn't start really drinking until about age 18. You know, I was a late guy. Started out with just beer with the boys. And after a while with that, the progression kind of kicked in where the beer got too much beer, and all we were doing is getting bloated and having to stop and pee all the time. So, we switched to the hard liquor. Jack Daniels, the vodka, then the 100 proof stuff. All along when this was happening, I didn't even realize what the heck was going on in my life. You know, when they talk about the phases of alcoholism, denial, anger, blaming, bargaining, and then finally acceptance, you know, I was in that denial mode so bad that I had all sorts of people trying to help me. My sister, my family, cousins, good friends, ex-ball players that I played sports with, and we just always thought we were in control. We always thought that this is not going to happen to me. We call it the it's not going to happen to me-ism, you know. It's always that other guy. You know, not me. That's that other stupid idiot you're talking about, not me. And, you know, really it was, you know, when you, I always love it when you point that finger, you know, it was him. You know, those guys are the ones doing it. We always forget about the other three that are pointing back at us. You know, little things like that that I learned when I came in to this program, you know, really, really helped me out. I don't really like to, this is a big crowd, man. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I told my wife, I said, I have no idea what I'm getting myself into tonight. It's so nice when you're just sitting around the table, you know, and you just kind of look down and share, and you're just running all this stuff through your head, and I'm looking at everybody, and y'all looking at me like I'm something, you know. But, you know, that ain't it, man. I don't really like to talk about what happened before September 11th, 1988. I do share about September 9th and 10th, because that was, you know, the time that I, they talk about in the big book, you know, that spiritual awakening, that moment of clarity, you know, when finally the buzzer goes off or the light comes on. You know, up to that point, before September 9th or 10th, you know, we all go through the going to jail, getting arrested, the DUIs, you know, everything. We all got them stories down. We know what happened. We all got the same story. Just twist a little bit, you know, and that changes the person. But it's just to share with you about how sick I was and how bad this disease really had a hold of me. Bad. September 9th and 10th, you know, there was other issues going along with the alcohol, but I gotta always remember that I started with alcohol and I finished with alcohol. But just to give you an example of this denial thing, or even this look good, you know, in AA, you know, in denial, we always have this thing, this look good. You know, it's hard for us to open up and be honest, you know, and say that, you know, hey, I was this. Really, I was. And it's hard to do that, but because we always want to look good. And, you know, what I'm about to share with you, maybe some of you have done this, but September 10th, keep in mind I had, you know, a couple of DUIs, had no license, I had a license for a couple of years. Typical partying, had the girls over at the house. And about the time that all the dope runs out and the alcohol gets low, you know, everybody leaves. And it got to be 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, and everybody left, and I was there by myself. The alcohol had run out. We'd been up on a 2 or 3 day run. And, you know, I'm looking at the clock going, it's 20 minutes to 2, you know, I can make it somewhere. But too scared to go. And what happened in those next 3 hours that I can't even describe to you, but it was just me and my dog, and the depression set in, bad. You know, my whole life, this is giving me goosebumps right now, and I'm very emotional too when I think about it. Because the people that I hurt, the things that I did, the people that loved me the most, it seems like, why do we squash the people that we love the most? And folks, I was right there with you. You know, we take advantage of their kindness. You know, we mistake that kindness for weakness, and we squash the people that we love. but I'm sort of getting off the point there. The look good. From 2 a.m. to 5 a.m., those 3 hours, I was sniveling, crying. My dog's looking at me, you know, he's wanting to play ball, he's laughing, you know, and all this stuff. And I'm just in this emotional thing. You think about, you know, I went through the suicidal, you know, tendencies, but I was afraid. You know, we all got weapons in the house. I had one there. I was a big old fat chicken. I wasn't going to do that. Just crying. And then I'll tell you how my luck went. And you know, my God is kind of humorous, I guess, when I look back at that. Because when I look through the yellow pages, I'm just going through all this crazy stuff. And I call the 1-800-COCAINE-ANONYMOUS or 1-800-GO-FIND-HELP or whatever. And God, my luck was going that night. It's 2:30 in the morning, now 3 o'clock. And nobody answered the goddamn phone. You know, this is how my luck's going, you know, and so I try and find another number, and somebody answers, you know, and I'm boo-hooing, crying, I need help. Could you hold, please? We have some other calls. Hold on, please. Oh, shit, you know, nobody loves me. Poor me. You know, I'm just going through all this stuff, and that, you know, that's a true story, man. And, get to the point, at about 5:30, I saw a deal on the yellow pages, and I don't know if you guys have been around here a while, but there was a recovery center that Frank and Shirley Ross ran out on Lover's Lane, there east of Tulare, called The Ranch. And, you know, Frank, I love him to death, and God bless Shirley. I call up there, and check this out. It's 5:30 in the morning. I kind of dried up a little bit, you know, splash some water on my face. All right, I'm ready to make this call. And I dial the phone number, and 5:30 in the morning. Good morning. Yes, good morning. My name's Ty, you know, I think I'd really like to come out and check your place out, you know. I don't think I'm going to go to work today. I haven't had a job in a while. I don't think I'm going to go to work today, but I'd really like to come in and check this place out. You know, I'm trying to just look this thing, you know. And Frank, you know, being Frank, he said, sure, come on out. I got a pot of coffee on. Come on out. But the reason why I share this with you is that my life was in shambles. You know, if the suicide was right there. Everything was right there. But we pick up the phone, dry up the tears, and we put on the show. You know, who in the hell is going to call at 5:30 in the morning and say, you know, my alarm just went off, I'm feeling great, I just slept for 8 hours, I'm going to go to rehab. You know, we just don't do that kind of stuff. That's the kind of guy I was. You know, I had a big hole right here. You know, and I just tried to fill it with all sorts of alcohol and substances, and I just, you know, I was just empty. You know how people say you look inside their eyes and you know, the light's not on. That was me. But yet at 5:30 in the morning, I had to look good. You know, I had to say, here I come, you know. I didn't know then, but, you know, that little old man showed me how to live and started to teach me how to live without alcohol and drugs. And honestly, you know, that was the first day of the rest of my life. There's not too many times that I talk about 1984 through 1988. Because it just, there's just a whirlwind tour of, I don't even remember the summer of 88 at all too much, just like you guys. But, you know, and I did check in there. Frank did call my dad that morning because he just did. I begged him not to. But he did, and all he said was, your son's in good hands. And, you know, Frank took me in. And for the first time in my life, you guys, I had to sit down, shut up, and listen, you know, because it was always Ty's way or no way. You know, I was always running my life, shut the hell up, I'm going to do what I want to do, period, end of subject. And it was kind of neat because people, like everybody in here, you know, you guys, we all full covers real well, you know. Well, if you're so goddamn smart, what the hell are you doing here anyway? You know, why'd you end up in jail? Why'd the old lady leave you 3 times? Why you been married for? Blah, 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 blah. You know, and they had a way of just chipping away at me. You know, Frank, he just chipped away every day. You know, that big, solid core of ice that I had around me and I wouldn't let anybody get inside. He just slowly just chipped away at it. And it wasn't an easy road for me. I was real fortunate to hook up with people like Johnny Mack. Doc D, Fifth Chapter Motorcycle Group, Sober Riders. And, you know, folks, for me to put my trust into somebody like Johnny and Doc, you know, the leathers, long hair, riding the bike, you know, I was the type of person that I grew up, and I'll be honest with you, I did judge the book by its cover. I mean, if you didn't have a nice ride and have a good job and live in a good-sized town and have a good house, well, what the hell do I want to talk to you for? You know? And I remember early on those guys saying things and talking about stuff, and I'm going, what in the hell are these people doing here, you know? They belong in jail or something like that. But I tell you right now, those guys saved my life, you know? And they taught me so much on how to live life. But I didn't know how to live life. I mean, when I was pissed off, I drank. When I was happy, I drank. When, you know, all those emotions. Danielle used to say that we drank because our copers were broken. We ain't got no coping skills. We don't know how to cope with shit. You know? It was always through the bottle or through some sort of substance in the altered state. That's how we coped. And so, you guys taught me how to live without being in the altered state. Learning how to cope. If you feel sad, you cry. If you're happy, you smile. You know, these are normal things that normal people do. The first year was tough. I remember I got my 9-month shift. It's kind of interesting. AA's got a weird way of figuring it all out because you always feel real good about chip time, 36 and 96 and 9 months. But man, it's those months in between for some reason, you know, that made it hard for me to get there. I took phone numbers. You know, I thought I was freaking smart. It was ridiculous. I told one guy, what in the hell do I want a phone number for? Well, if you're not feeling well or if you've got some thing you need to talk about, just call me. What the hell is that all about? What am I going to tell you for? And you know what? I thought that was the stupidest thing in the world until about, I don't know, 60, 70 days, somewhere in there. I just had some urges and things were just happening and I just didn't know where to turn and there wasn't a meeting and I just couldn't find one. So you know what? I picked up that phone and I called my then first sponsor and it was amazing. And that was the first time I learned about telling on ourselves. You know, that was the first time I learned that, you know, if we have a thought that becomes a secret, will become an action. And I had that thought, and I suppressed that thought into a secret, and it was killing me inside. And I couldn't believe it after David said, you want to talk on the phone or you want to come over to the house? This is like 11:30 at night. And I said, you really want me to come over? And he said, yeah, it's not a big deal. And, you know, I went over there. David must have said 10 words the whole evening. I just, blah, 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 blah. I was the happiest guy in the whole wide world when I left David's house. The urge to drink or use went away. The problem that I thought was so catastrophic was now so minuscule. And I had to laugh about it, you know. It's like the next day, I asked David, I said, what did you tell me? You had fixed everything. He said, I didn't tell you nothing, man. I just sat here and sipped on the coffee and listened to you wail on. You know? And that's when I learned about getting it out. You know? If you got to go to a meeting and you got to get it all out, and it's something that you don't want to share amongst your peers or friends, you go to another meeting or take it over to Porterville or Hanford or wherever, and you get rid of that secret. That secret will lead you to insanity. I tell you what, if that was the most important thing I ever learned, is telling on yourself. Because if you don't tell on yourself, who's going to tell on you? You know? So anytime I had a little, just a crazy thought, I didn't even let it get to the secret stage, much less the action stage. I told on myself. You know? When I came into the program too, I was so headstrong. I didn't want to believe in God. I didn't want to think there was a higher power. I wanted to always think that I was in control, like I told you before. I want, when I want it, where I want it, and I'll tell you when I want to get it. Period. And I had a hard time with the higher power thing. I had a hard time with the spirituality thing. But you know, everybody in these rooms, all of you, helped me out, because each and every one of you would tell me certain things like, I'd make a comment to something that, well, I'll tell you, my first job was with Danielle at the group home at the Karras house. And I told Frank or somebody, or Johnny, I said, man, what a coincidence. And he's looking at me, I go, yeah, what a coincidence. You know, Danielle was at the meeting, heard my story, and she asked me to work for her. And Johnny says, well, you know what a coincidence is, don't you? Yeah, it's just good luck. He goes, no, you idiot, that's God working anonymously. Really? He goes, well, who else put Danielle at that same spot? I didn't go tell Danielle to ask you to hire your ugly butt to that house. Wow. Coincidence. God working anonymously, huh? All right. You know? And so little things would happen like that. And even small things. And I'd go back and ask Johnny or Frank, is that God working anonymously? And they'd look at me with that weird look. Well, what else do you think it is? It sure in the hell wasn't on your resume that you got hired or whatever. You know? And so it was just little things like that that helped me out. And it was all because of people in this 12-step program. I learned to finally listen, open up my heart. You know, that's so sad that before we get in here, you know, who we listen to, who we take orders from, is crazy. You know, we don't have friends out there, you guys. You know that. We got drinking buddies. We got drug buddies. We got running partners. We don't have good, true friends like we have in here. You know? Every single time I thought about it, when the alcohol ran out and the party was over and the dope was gone, everybody left. I had a pretty tight group, what I thought was a tight group. You know, 12, 15 guys. When I got out of Frank's house and I went back home, out of those 15 guys, you know how many people came by to see me? Two. They'd all moved on. You know? I was the same way. We're all leeches. We're all just trying to get the free booze, the free party, this, that, the other thing. You know, so I was real fortunate to see what was happening in my life. You know, that those people really weren't my friends. But I had to make new friends. I had to open up my heart and open up my hands and give people hugs and you know, give the guys hugs and all that stuff. And it's like, ooh, wow, this is getting real serious here now. But it was all good. I tell you what, in my 20 years and 7 months of sobriety, I have never once been steered wrong by a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. The main thing that I got out of my sobriety, and that question was asked of me, I still work with kids, and some of the teachers in the district office, you know, asked me, what is the most important thing that you've achieved in sobriety? And, you know, it's so funny how the normies out there, they address the level of success by how much money you make or the car that you drive or whatever like that. And it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. The best thing that I got is myself back. My self-esteem, my sense of self-worth. And the most important thing is that I can choose where Ty wants to go today without being influenced by any person, place, or thing at any given time. Page 449 in the big book of the last edition. Unfortunately, I don't know the page on the new edition. But because that was me. I was, before I got sober, I was influenced by people, places, and things. I was just, you know, I just had strings. I was like a puppet. And whoever pulled the string the hardest, that's where I went. But I got me back. You know, I can say no today. I don't want to go there. No, thank you. Have a good time. I can choose what I want to do, when I want to do it, and where I want to do it at. That's the freedom that I got back that I didn't have before. I'll give you an example. I think I had about 4 years of sobriety. Courtney might have had three, I think. We were at the farm show, walking by the beer booth, and we see all the buddies over there drinking beer. We're probably a good 50 yards away. And we see them over there, wave at them, stuff like that. And Courtney said, man, I want to go over there and talk to, you know, my old buddies. I said, Courtney, all those guys over there know exactly what you and I have been through. And don't you think if they were really, really true friends, they'd set their beer down and come outside and see how we were doing? Courtney said, damn, Ty, I never looked at it that way. I said, man, it might be selfish, but I got to look at it that way, you know? And all these kind of things was taught to me by people in these rooms. That you have the freedom and you have the choice to do anything you want in this world. Anything. And so, you know, with the guidance of people from Alcoholics Anonymous and my sponsors, I learned things like that. I don't have to go into that territory. I can stay where I need to be. And fortunately, with my higher power, it gives me the guidance to make those choices. We're doing all right, huh? My sobriety was really put to the test after 1 year of sobriety. I was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And the doctors around here really couldn't find out what was wrong with me. I was fortunate enough to be in a position to go over to Santa Barbara. My parents sent me over there. And after an array of tests and whatnot, they did find the tumor. And they did operate on me that following day. And everything went real well. I was over there by myself. And as far as the treatment goes, was 45 days of intense radiation therapy in the lower area here, plus my lymph nodes. And there again, fortunate enough for my parents, they were able to put me up at Motel 6 there in Santa Barbara. And so I lived in Santa Barbara for 45 days at Motel 6, going to get my radiation therapy every day. Radiation therapy, you guys, if you take it here in the center like this, usually after about 3 hours, anything that you have inside of you comes out. You get definitely sick and lasts about 3 hours of your worst ever hangover. But I had to start all over again. Not that I relapsed, but I had to walk into Alcoholics Anonymous in Santa Barbara, California, and say, hi, my name's Ty, and I'm a newcomer, and I need some help. And, you know, I did it. It was hard for me to do it, but I did it. You know, when Alan says, you're a newcomer, you know, I stood right up. And I said, hi, my name's Ty. I'm here from Tulare, California. I live in Motel 6. I just got through the cancer surgery. But I need some help. I want to stay sober. Half the room came and talked to me afterwards. It was amazing. It's amazing, you guys, what will happen if you just say, I need help. Please help me. I don't feel good right now. Can we go get a cup of coffee? Can you spend some time with me? Don't be afraid to ask. We used to ask total strangers when we were kids to buy us freaking beer. We used to go to the ungodliest place of school. Where? In Buckleish Grove? On what side of town? In Fresno? And what abandoned house? Okay. Well, if we come in here, and we don't say nothing. And we can't wait for the Stevie Ann deal. You know? I remember I did that. My first DUI, I had to go to Stevie Ann's and Pine. They smoked so much you couldn't see. And it's like, oh, God, you know, I'm cussing the judge, cussing everybody. Why do I have to go to these stupid meetings? You know, I just got a stupid one DUI. You know, that was part of my recovery, too. It really didn't sink in until after the second or third one. But, you know, I was just like that. I wasn't ready. I wasn't in that acceptance stage. But you'll be amazed if you just... We don't read minds in here, folks. I mean, I can look at everybody in the eye. And you guys all look good to me. We're all having a great day, right? We don't know it unless you say something, man. You know? Johnny Mac told me, he said, Ty, if you work on hand sober as hard as you worked on getting drunk and getting under the influence, effed up, you will have no problem in this program of what we call recovery. How many phone calls did you make to find the party? How many phone calls did you make to find that last sack? How many phone calls did you do? How many miles did you drive? Let's go to Bakersfield one time. I'll be back in 2 hours. Insane. So I took it to that level. I jumped in here and I worked on my sobriety just like I used to work on my getting wasted. You know? Pretty simple. I asked John, what's a four step? He said, don't worry about it. Go to meetings and don't drink or use in between. You'll be fine. Do your 90 meetings in 90 days and don't drink in between all that stuff and don't get all caught up in all the hype. Because it ain't that big of a deal. I had to slap me upside the head. Because why? We start sabotaging our own recovery. Aren't we all good at that?
No.
No? I was. I mean, I screwed up so many things, you guys. Stuff that was just handed me. I screwed it all up. You know, it seems like our life always has to be like this. You know, it gets good, we make it bad. It gets good, we make it bad. It gets good, we make it bad. We're just in a roller coaster of all this stuff. And then we get into sobriety and all of a sudden it's... I call it the flat line. We don't do flatline well because we want to do this all the time. You know? How many people can make man today? You know? That's the way we live. I live that way. So I had to learn to develop that flatline. I had to learn to, you know, the bill collector stopped calling. You don't have to dodge people anymore. You know, it just got real good. And there was times that I was trying to sabotage my recovery. And Johnny and David and everybody else are going, what the heck are you talking about, dude? You know, and you guys, God, G-O-D, good orderly direction. You know, that's what I was about to say, that you guys gave me good orderly direction. Is that a good one? Anyway, good orderly direction. I need to get back to my Santa Barbara thing, man. I think you guys get the picture, though. What's that? You want to share? Go for it, dude. You're on, man. Why not? Hey, we share it, right? You share?
No, I just need happiness.
All right.
Hey guys, my name is Bernie and I'm an addict.
Hi, Bernie.
And this is my second time I come to this meeting. And the church told me this Monday, I told him, you know what, Your Honor? I got home from the ranch and I called my sponsor and I told him I was going to, I forgot, because last week we had a vacation and I had to go to court. And anyways, I called my sponsor and told him that I was going to be late, but I was on my way on the freeway already. He goes, hurry up. And he goes, Bernie, are you related to so-and-so? And I caught the picture. I go, no, Your Honor, because the people on the right side laughing because I guess I was just sharing everything that was going on piece by piece. To make the long story short, I'm fucking forgiven for my time and friends. I'm fucking happy because my Heavenly Father, Jesus Christ, He's been blessing me day after day, minute after minute, because I haven't picked up no pizzle, I haven't drank no pisto, I haven't smoked no cigarettes, nothing. My soul is living large right now. My soul, I read the Word of God, I wake up early, and I see the program of that girl, Jamie something, Joyce. Oh, man. My heart smiles when I turn her on. Anyways, I wake up, I do a hardcore coffee, 2 table shots of coffee, and 1 tablespoon full of sugar. And I sit down, I'm laughing, listening to her. Anyways, I wake up early to feed the little baby chick, the fighting cock. My judge goes, don't say the fighting cock. I go, the 6 roosters in the backyard. He's just leaning back. I do with a big ass smile, the judge. I'm like, thank you, Jesus. You know, I'm sharing everything. How my life is going, I don't want to look back at the past. Because if I were to tell you what I've lost, what badass rides I've lost, what finance I've lost, you say, oh. You know what? Fuck the past. Right now, I'm living large and I'm just going all the way forward, loving God and loving recovery and loving my sponsor, loving my counselor, loving everything about NA, because if it's to be, it's up to me. I just thank God. And like you say, when you see them people, you know what people are talking about. Recognize, avoid, and cope. You know, you're doing good. Just thank God and just live at large. And the light will start shining on you big. And when you go to church, praise Him with everything you got. When you feel Him in here, cry and say, thank you, Jesus. He loves that. You know, I know He does. And when you read the Word of God, your little soul is little. But when you read the Word of God, you start feeling, it starts getting big. And your heart feels happy and starts smiling and you feel good and you want to give it all to Him. And if it ain't Him, it ain't nothing. You know, without Him, we ain't shit. And with Him, we can do anything. And I just want to thank you guys for letting me share. And you shared good. And don't look back anymore because you might stumble. You know, just keep going forward with your head up and thank God for everything and live large and recovery.
Thanks, brother.
Alright, that's AA right there. Where was it? Santa Barbara? Yeah, you know, I started all over. I'm gonna start over in Santa Barbara. I'm not gonna start over on the... Yeah. I'm trying to not all, So anyway, when I was in Santa Barbara, it was almost like starting all over again for me. I made new friends there in Santa Barbara. I developed a little bit of a family there. And I did the same thing that I did when I first rolled up. You know, it does work, you guys. It really does. You know, don't do this. You know, don't complicate things. Keep it simple. Matt used to say another thing. He said, you know what, folks? Our disease is out there in the parking lot right now doing push-ups. Just wait for it to come out there, you know. So we have to be in here and stay strong and do what we have to do and resist our disease. Because the disease gets stronger every day of our life. You know, it's out there in the parking lot doing push-ups just waiting for us. And, you know, I'll just kind of speed up a little bit. Everything went real well for me in Santa Barbara. I've been in remission for years now, years and years. I had another bout with cancer in 1994. I don't know if this was all the drinking, but a tumor did show up in my bladder in 1994. I went back to Santa Barbara. I went to surgery again, went back in the same meeting. I went through all that. I stayed sober. Didn't even think about drinking or using because didn't even think about it because I know what the insanity is all about. I know what the insanity is all about. What I get to live today is a whole new life for me. I wake up every morning excited. What is going to happen to me today? What is whether it be good, bad, or indifferent. Trust me, I've had bad days. You know, I remember being late going to Florida Western one time. My group started at 9 o'clock. I'll be gosh darn if I didn't catch 3 red lights and I thought I was home free and the freaking train's coming by. I go, all right, I understand it. It keeps me patient. I'm not in control. You know, just little things like that. So we learn how to cope with that. And I cope with it by that's just my God being funny. You know? That's it. I had to. Because before, we would get all up in a rage. And cussing at the red lights in the freaking train. We're throwing our coffee cup at it as it's going by, you know, and all that stuff. But,
I mean, that's right.
But, you know, but I learned how to deal with that.
Grass is kind of cute, too. He gave me a little thing to put on my mirror that said, dear Ty, I probably won't need your help today. Love, God. Fucking grass. You know? But I put it up there because I always wanted to be in control. You know, just little things like that. Page 449, you know, the acceptance page, you know, people, places, and things are going to be exactly the way it's supposed to be at that time at any given moment. Period, end of subject. And if we can't learn to accept that person, place, or thing at that given time, then we are not going to have no peace. We are not going to be able to accept our alcoholism or our disease, and we are just going to continue to fight this world or this country that we live in, because we will have no peace. Frank Ross always said, Ty, you can wake up in the morning, dude, and on your way to work, you can look at all the birds, the trees, the nice sky, maybe a little sprinkles of rain or whatever. Or you can drive down and look at the litter in the streets, graffiti on the walls, and cuss people when they speed by you. He says, it's your choice. That's what I got back out of sobriety, was my choice, you know. 1994, you know, that all went real well. Just to fast forward, those are just a couple of the hiccups that I had in my life. I did get married to a gal that I met here in recovery. We had good 10 years maybe? Good, happy 10 years. She decided that she just wanted to move on. You know, I boo-hooed and cried, let's go to California, my dear. You know, I tried everything. Then again, I wasn't in control. She wanted to leave. Hey, I finally accepted it. You know, then I moved on. God's got a weird sense of humor, man. You know, when I got sober, I thought, oh, I'm going to experience all this good stuff, man. You know, I'm going to, what did I do? I learned how to scuba dive. I did the bungee jump, you know, that thing they had at the fair that one time. You know, I did the bungee jump. It's like, oh, I'm living large. You know, man, I'm doing all this, doing all that. I thought I was really experiencing what life was all about. But I had no clue what my God had in store for me. I had no clue. And the divorce has something to do with it. You know how they always say, oh, it'll get better. It'll be just for the best time. Shut up. You know? But you know what? It was. I don't know how it happened, what happened. It's got to be my higher power. There was this gal that was 12 years younger than me. We became friends. I thought she was a little haughty, but I didn't think she'd ever fall in love with my old ass, you know? But she did. We got happily married. I don't want to go too fast. But at 43 years old, you guys, I experienced the birth of my first child. And that was unlike no bungee jump, no scuba dive, nothing. And after Sydney was born, and after all the plot settled down, I said a little prayer. And I said, I get the picture. Because I was in control. I was bungee jumping, scuba diving, doing this, all this stuff that I thought was great. And he proved me wrong. You know? Proved me wrong. 43 years old. And little Sydney is now 6. We did have another little girl, Riley Elizabeth. Just another blessing, another miracle in my life. You know? I got 2 happy girls. I think they're happy. I'm happy. I was at the Monday night meeting at La Spina there, catty corner from Home Depot, that's my home group, St. John's, and Pat summed it up, all. Pat summed it up. Pat's got, what's that, 7, 8 years, somewhere like that? She summed it up the other night, and she said, I am living my best life right now. And you know what, folks? I've been saying that for probably 19 years. No jails, no institutions for me. You know, my cousin Mark had 7 years of sobriety. Mark and I were pretty tight. We were running buddies. He was sober 7 years. And fortunately for him, he went through a divorce. He relapsed on the alcohol. It took him 6 months. He got back on the other stuff. In 9 months, he was dead. A violent car accident under the influence, him and Donnie.
And the only thing I could say to him in that closed casket at his funeral is, thank you. Thank you, Mark. Because I saw firsthand what this disease can and will do if you don't watch it. You know? Mike C., my first sponsor, 10 years of sobriety, heroin addict, great sponsor. What in the hell is a heroin addict going to do and help me? Straight A student, 3 scores out of 8. Mike helped me out so much. He relapsed on alcohol. He was lucky to make it back. You ought to hear his story. I can go on and on. John T., 6 months of sobriety. That was me at Looney's Grove out there. Overdose. Jack Daniels found him on the couch with a bottle in his hand. He had the chance. I can list name after name after name of friends of mine that had a chance here in this program. If you're here tonight, you have a chance when you walk out that door. You have that chance. Fortunately enough for me, I've been around the block a few times to see what really happens. People ask, Ty, do you still go to those meetings? Hell yes, I do. You know why I go to those meetings? To find out what's going to happen to me if I relapse. You know? This is cheap insurance, folks. Cheap insurance, man. 1 hour out of our day. I got a kid over in Tulare right now. He's 18 years old. And he tried to get sober on his own back in December. Just couldn't do it. Writing up with it, blah, 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 blah. And so he finally gave in. And he said, you know what? I'll go to those meetings with you, Ty. He was the Sunday night. That was his first meeting. Remember him, Chris?
Yeah.
You were there. Brian now has 3 weeks or coming up on that, 3 or 4 weeks. And we were in class the other day. And he goes, I don't know how I'm doing it, Ty, but I just feel good. I mean, maybe not just you, but he's feeling good. He's staying sober. And I said, Brian, tell me what the difference is between December and now. Well, my parents are mad at me. Nope. Tell me the difference, Brian. Well, my girlfriend, Brian, tell me the difference. I really want, Brian, tell me the difference. Oh, I went to those meetings. Thank you very much. And that's what I told Brian. I said, I don't know what it is about those meetings, but it works. Don't try and figure it out, you guys. Like Johnny Mac said, just go to meetings and don't drink or use in between. All right? Is that it, bud? Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it.